not survive long. Who would say that human beings are the only life worth saving? It seems so absurd. And yet that seems to be the plan. The most basic, far-reaching policy of the United States leadership at this time is to do nothing, say nothing, change nothing. In this slow-motion orgy of death, we go about our day with the understanding that life as we know it is ending. We go to work if we can find it, raise our kids if we can find them, have sex if we can get it, sleep, and wake up. We know it won't be long.
And back again for some goodbyes and thank yous. We want to thank Sam Meredith, CNBC, interviewing Yeb Sanyo, the executive director of the Southeast Asia Greenpeace. Thank you so much. Wanjiri Mathai, thank you for talking about the young people at COP27. The television show from South Lismore, didn't get the names, but what an extraordinary situation. That mother with her three daughters and husband up on the roof of a house surrounded by water as far as the eye can see. The Fiery Eagles of Justice and the Stop Shopping Choir lent us their music for this Earth Riot show. We want to thank you. And Savitri D, the reporter and the voice of the news from the natural world. This is Reverend Billy for Earth Riot Radio. Earthalluia.
This is Roger Fisher from Heart. You're listening to 90.7 KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon. Tell your friends to listen on in and support the mass movement of the human tribe.
Andy, whoa, whoa, looks a scream. Andy, mon, now, whoa, whoa, whoa. Andy, whoa, whoa, silver scream. Can't tell them apart at all.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Hannah Bocken Morris. She's the co-curator of Commonly Uncommon, Selections from the Museum of Contemporary Craft Collection, which is on now through December the 10th at the Pacific Northwest College of Art at Broadway and Gleason. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus, Hannah.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
The Craft Museum was absorbed into PNCA, basically, and you had access to the entire collection online, and you had this concept of a show you wanted to put on, you and your co-curators. Why did you call it Commonly Uncommon?
Yes, Commonly Uncommon was kind of a little tongue-in-cheek for us, I think. Thinking about craft and the role that craft plays in community and how we see ourselves socially and as individuals, and how often craft is associated with domestic things, domestic work and labor, and is often set aside from maybe what is considered fine art. And so in our curation of this exhibition, looking at the collection from the Museum of Contemporary Craft, which is over 800, I think, plus items, coming at it through a lens of what is like kind of domestic in its objects and what they are, but what is strange, what is pushing what craft is considered to usually be in terms of utilitarian objects, ceramics and bowls that you make. And using those traditions of making and putting a kind of uncanny, strange term on them. So things that are common, but uncommon in their final form.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So as you come in the gallery in PNCA, the 511 gallery, on the right side, everything's in vitrines, and there's one glass box with a Storm Tharp piece called Bather 2, and it's a ceramic head. It's a man with a beard and a bit of shoulder, and the glaze is all cracked. And then he has this sort of paper flower in his hair, as far as I can tell, sort of red, white, and blue, a bit faded. So this is, unless there's somewhere to put your tea, this is not a a teapot or a flower vase. This is a bust.
Why
was it in the Kraft Museum?
I can't speak to why it was put into the collection, but it grabbed our attention for this exhibition for a few different reasons. You know, like you said, it looks like a bust, maybe kind of Grecian, mm-hmm. Roman reference, but that cracking in the glaze is a very interesting texture and materiality that kind of contrasts to those traditional forms. And I liked the multiple use of materials, paper and the ceramic and then this wooden base. But for me, knowing Stormtharp's work, it stood out to me as an object in his artistic practice because I have largely only seen 2D works by Storm. And this is the first time I'd seen a 3D object and I hadn't known that he had actually made things like that. Mm-hmm. So very uncommon for his practice and just a lovely object to look at. And we liked positioning it to kind of stare you down or stare at you the minute you approach the gallery and enter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He sculpted it, is that right?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, so he's a very good sculptor of the human head.
Yeah, he's, you know, completely amazing in rendering forms 2D and drawing and doing these 3D realism and then abstracting it, but yeah, the precision in sculpting this human face is really lovely to look at.
Mm-hmm. Another glass case next to it has three pieces. So one is by Hilary Pfeiffer, who's been working in Portland for decades. She often does these small, they look like spores or some bacteria, they're usually colored. She put like hundreds of them up in a space. Here you have one, it's a sort of bean shape with a round hole at each end surrounded by like hair, but also in the light blue color, the hole is pink, but everything is light blue. And then there are wires coming out of it that look like, I mean, I thought it was a handbag at first, but the wires don't touch. It's not a handle. So it looks like a growth, a sort of a mutant animal, bacteria, or plant. And it's called Tumulus pilosus. What does that mean?
That's a great question. I don't know what it means, and that's what I love about this piece. And Hilary's practice in general is she creates these really imaginative forms that reference things that we're familiar with but aren't quite right, and they're fantastical and imaginative, and she pushes material in ways that really kind of obscures what the material actually is, and that uncommon nature of it. I loved Hilary's piece for that reason. It's a strange object. It stands out in this show as having a little bit of humor compared to most of the rest.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very kind of pop art, but three-dimensional. And then there's a runner, Neunschwander, Queen Semiramis war elephant. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a camel with a ceramic, and it has this beautiful little white camel, probably 12 inches tall. And then the camel is carrying a ceramic elephant, but the elephant is like an elephant suit. It's all stitched together. Yeah, it's porcelain. Yep, yeah,
porcelain.
Made in 1982.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this one I think, as far as humor goes in the show, is nicely paired next to Hilary's. And so the story that I recall from Rana's time making this work while she was in residence for the Gallery for Contemporary Crafts, that's the Corbett location where they were originally. She became really interested in the story of this queen that in war was trying to kind of posture to the other forces and literally tried dressing up camels as elephants to try to scare them off, and it didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And this actually was a pivotal moment in Rana's creative practice, this residency, because it kind of opened a whole spiral into research about elephants. So a lot of her later work is very, very elephant related. Mm-hmm. So it had this nice moment of like history of residencies at the institution that used to be. And I like that this is a piece that has that moment captured for her development.
Mm. Mm-hmm. And also in the glass cases, Charissa Brock's spiral, black bamboo, wax linen thread on a steel base. And it looks like a shell. It's a spiral. it's strips of bamboo, and there's a black kind of seam of fabric holding it all together. Some of the strips curl out into like almost like eyelashes, but it's a abstract shape. I don't think it's a lamp, or it's not doing anything.
No, and that's that piece, you know, as far as utilitarian, it's not doing anything, but it still is attractive to the eye, and to think about how to reverse engineer what is this material, how it was made. And Carissa is a lovely master in working with material of bamboo and her investment in it. And I love how it references basket making or basket-like forms, but then often in her work, especially this one, it's like she sliced the basket in two and twisted it and abstracted it and changed it into something else. Still comes from that traditional practices of basket making, but has been changed into something new.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What's nice is you've got, it's kind of like one piece by one artist, but you can sort of imagine what their other work is like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if these people are sort of experimenting here, but when maybe they made something utilitarian like baskets or lamps or something, you know, what would they look like?
Mm-hmm.
This is them experimenting, I feel, and making art for art's sake.
Yeah,
as opposed to trying to reproduce a usable object.
Yeah, and I think they certainly have a history of usable objects, but this is where that craft and fine art and object making is really colliding for me, is in examples like that.
There's a great little guide to this show, actually. People should look it up. But number 18 is these aluminum objects. One looks like a wok, but very mm-hmm. small. It's like a sphere with a bamboo wooden handle around the top. So it's like a wok with a lid on it. Another looks like a pitcher, and it has a round aluminum hoop for a handle that goes through a wooden sphere. And then there's a kind of a two-tiered, like a cake tray, cake stand thing with a wooden U-shaped bamboo handle. Then there's a kind of a pot and another thing. It's probably an ashtray. Because this was Russell Wright. This was made in 1934. These pieces, mm-hmm. 1934. So this was like super cool Art Deco kind of, you know, aluminum, the hot new material.
Mm-hmm.
Have this in your stylish home. It still looks great today, actually.
Yeah, and that's what attracted us to it. I mean, Russell Wright has a good notoriety for being a really well-known designer and kind of object architect, but he mm-hmm. is very prolific in ceramics as well, which were wider collected and a bit more accessible in a price range. Still coveted. I know people that are always hunting for Russell Wright pieces.
Oh, really?
Which is funny.
Well, that's Russell Wright with
mm-hmm.
a W if you're out there Googling. it's this very thin aluminum. It's got that stripe, you know, everywhere, this grain from where it's been turned.
Which is so amazing. And that idea of the handmade, I think with this piece, this collection of pieces, it's kind of this odd picnic set. There's like not quite enough mm-hmm. objects to have a picnic, but you could find a way to, you know, use them interestingly. You called that smaller one an ashtray. That I hadn't thought about that. So let your imagination run a little bit with utilitarianism. But also, like in the 30s, making this piece, that's a pretty profound way to push back on like growing industrialization, to really work this metal without a machine and work it by hand. And I think the designs hold up to this moment. They're still attractive, and maybe that's because history repeats itself. You circle back to what once was, and you appreciate the things in their lineage and where the design sensibility came from.
Mm-hmm. Every listener can picture this. It's a stepladder leaning against the wall, and imagine a wooden stepladder where somebody's taken a paring knife and pared down every single part of it to very thin, round, not very even pieces, and it's all still connected. So it looks like, you know, one foot on that and the whole thing would just fall apart. So it's one of these kind of ironic pieces, you know, the stepladder, that the essence of a stepladder, but it would no longer work. Who is this by, and what is the wood, or, you know, how is it made?
You know, this is a piece, we've talked to the past curator of the museum, and she didn't really know much story on it either. So Casey Brown, if you're out there listening, we want to hear about this piece and how it became a part of the collection, because it's been one of our favorites for the show. It was like one of the first pieces we chose to kind of guide our curatorial vision. And my goodness, it's been a crowd favorite for so many. We had our facilities crew come in and obsess over it and make jokes like, how do you get 3 points of contact with that? And it's just been really fun. So it's
called Objective Failure One, and it's actually from 2011, so
yeah.
It's quite new.
It was probably one of the final things that was put into the collection before the collection came to PNCA in 2016. Very contemporary. I love the humor. I love the tension of it. It looks like toothpicks. It's very thin.
And she took the steps off, I should add. So it looks like a skeleton of a stepladder.
And we chose to display it folded up against the wall, a bit tongue-in-cheek for our install process. Like, oh, the show is done. Put the ladder away. But it's still visible.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Hannah Bocken-Morris. She's the co-curator of Commonly Uncommon, which is the Selections from the Museum of Contemporary Craft collection, on now at PNCA through December the 10th. So it all comes back to tea. The postcard image for the show is this crazy blue teapot. It's very thin, flat teapot, and it's got a very skinny handle, a weird sort of ice cream cone lid, which is just the stopper, really, and then a curving spout, which goes back on itself, kind of like an elephant trunk. And the bottom is also shaped like almost like a chip, the bit that sticks out underwater, or like an iron. And the whole thing is, it's purple. What is it called? Purple teapot?
Purple teapot.
But it's blue. It's like two-tone. There's an undertone of light blue, or royal blue, with this sort of sugary, textured purple finish, like spray paint. Who's this by?
This is Patrick Horsley, who is a very prominent, very proliferate ceramic maker here in Portland.
And this was made in 1998.
I love that it seems, I was talking to another viewer that knew a little bit more about ceramics, and they laughed at this piece, not because of the wildness of the form necessarily, but the fact that it looks like it's still been made with the intention that it could serve something out of there if it wanted, and they kind of laughed at ceramicists and their obsession with remaining true to the utilitarian use of an object.
Oh, really?
Even if it doesn't
thing.
Yeah,
so if it looks like a teapot, then it has to hold tea.
Perhaps that's what it looked like to that viewer, Patrick.
Okay.
You might say differently and you didn't think about that at all, but I've found that observation to be really lovely to think about.
So this has been sitting in a box in storage for since the museum closed?
Yeah, just waiting for this show.
A couple more pieces that I think visitors have to see. One is this pink and white plastic. It's not a tea service. It's some teacups, plates, saucers, and a butter dish, you know, on those elongated rectangular butter dishes. It's by Heidi Schwedler, and it's called More Than Simply Made, melamine tea set pierced with Ming Dynasty pattern. So it's made of melamine than
it's
regular plastic.
A little bit more durable than regular plastic, and it was a material that came out, I think, in the 50s that became very hip and cheap, and what families would start buying for their, you know, collected sets within the family. And so Heidi came in, took this found set, and by hand carved this Ming pattern, Ming Dynasty pattern into these plates. So talking about what happens when you take this material that is not precious, that is not important, and imbue it with these patterns that are historically revered and cared for. Do you start to care for this object in a different way?
The patterns are kind of a mixture of flowers and fish scales, but they don't go over all every surface. She's kind of left some of it blank. The teacups wouldn't work because everything is drilled straight through. Mm-hmm. So she did it by hand. I thought it looks like laser cutting.
Oh, this was all by hand, I believe, with jewelry tools going in there and somehow doing that. Mm-hmm. It's pretty profound. And then for her, it's important that there are shadows that come from up top and onto the bottom platform that this is displayed on.
Yeah, so you've displayed it with a white layer beneath. It's on glass, so you get to see the shadows. Do you know what the rest of her work is like? Do you know much else about her?
Yeah, Heidi is a force, and she used to teach at OCAC and is very well known in the craft community here in Portland. And her work is, you know, to me, and you can push back on these terms, Heidi, but creepy. She likes to take things that are very common and banal and make casts of them and turn them into the objects that are maybe monumentalized, or they're just not quite right. She really has a flair for putting strangeness on things. And mm-hmm. this piece is much more delicate and soft in her practice. I think her more recent works is a bit more, I would say, visceral and strange.
Mm-hmm. There's another case that has four things in it. So one is a stainless steel coffee pot with the handle is a stick, wooden, coming out from the top. And it looks highly impractical, but very beautiful. Then there's a large dish, probably 16 inches across, with a yellow spiral glaze, which really sticks up. There's another dish with a fish consuming an eel or a snake. That's the pattern. And some other animals on the outside. And then there's a kind of statement necklace made of ivory and stainless steel and wood, maybe. How do these four all get together?
Yeah, this grouping was fun to think about. Usable utilitarian objects. We got a bowl, we got a plate, we have a necklace, we have this pitcher that, you know, might be awkward, but you could pour something out of it. Looks like it could be used for a nice dinner party.
Oh, I thought it was a coffee pot.
Oh. You're right.
Yeah, in which case
coffee
you might
pot.
Burn your hand.
Yes.
Steam.
So more of a utilitarian grouping. You could see these objects being actually used more than maybe some others, like the purple teapot. The yellow plate is a uranium glaze by Victoria Navakian Ross, and she is important for the history of the Museum of Contemporary Art, the Oregon Ceramic Studio. She was one of the main founders, which later turned into the museum. And it's, you know, it's a uranium glaze. It is very indicative of the time that it was made. And one of our gallery attendants, Noel, came in the other day with his black light, and it does glow. So that was fun to check that out. Mm-hmm. The work by Baba Wagu Diakite, the bowl with the snake and the fish, I felt was an important addition because we're looking at ceramic objects and iconography. From non-white cultures. He's from West Africa, and the idea of craft as being so important to cultural practices and storytelling, and so this using iconography and symbols on this bowl that tells a story that represents a culture. Mm-hmm. And then Ramona Solberg and her necklace, she was a very prolific jewelry maker in the Pacific Northwest, and her use of materials and the fine crafting of how she would use found materials and wood is emblematic of this region, and we also just wanted to make sure that she was in the show.
So there are two other parts to the show in two separate rooms. One is a kind of look back at the craft museum because it has an interesting history, and the other one is about a movie called Handmade Nation. So just give us the 30-second version of the craft museum? Because it bounced around a bit.
It did bounce around. So originally it was founded in the 30s by a group of women, and that its original name was the Oregon Ceramic Studio. It later turned into more of a gallery and artist residency organization called the Oregon, the Gallery for Contemporary Crafts. And this was in the Southwest Corbett location. It's their original location. And then they moved to Northwest Davis, where the Jewish Museum is now. And they became the Museum of Contemporary Craft until it was dissolved in 2016, and we took care of the collection afterwards.
Mm-hmm. So PNCA took over the museum's collection, mm-hmm. and then Willamette University in Salem took over PNCA.
Yes.
And then
the Oregon College of Art and Craft also came into PNCA in some fashion. We took in their closure, got a lot of their equipment and their lineage.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So there's a whole room where you can read about this and see some of the old, you know, the touching warms the art exhibits where you're encouraged to touch and put things on.
Mm-hmm.
That was from 10 years ago, I guess. And then when you come to this other room, it's a bunch of movie posters, T-shirts, and a big case full of little videotape. So what's all this stuff?
Yeah, so The Handmade Nation was a film that came out in 2009.
Handmade Nation?
Mm-hmm. Handmade Nation by director Faith Levine, who is an artist and documentary filmmaker. She does quite a bunch of stuff in her life. And she traveled across the nation and interviewed dozens of crafters, makers, gallery owners about what it means to work in craft and DIY and their practices. And this was at the start of Etsy kind of growing up and gaining steam, and the internet wasn't what it is today. And it's just a really lovely capture in time of those early 2000s and how DIY and craft communities were really burgeoning and growing and became this national community. Not to say that we don't have that now, but it was a moment in time. So in the show, this room, you can watch the film in bits or stay for the whole thing in two little chairs. Look at all the ephemera for film screening posters and the actual videotapes that Faith made and various other little collectibles. She gave the whole ephemera archive to the Museum of Contemporary Craft, and so it's been fun to pull these items out and celebrate what this film was.
Mm-hmm.
And last week we had a film screening of the film and had Faith Levine zoom in for a Q&A session with collaborator Kate Bingaman Burt, who did the illustrations for the accompanying book of the same name.
Mm. Kate from PSU?
Mm-hmm, from PSU. And it was just a lovely discussion to kind of remember that moment. But also, I feel like a lot of us, myself included, came out feeling maybe there's another resurgence of this DIY, this push for craft, this push for community building, especially post-pandemic, where we definitely see, at least in educational institutions, that students are hungry to use their hands and to learn things like that and be self-sufficient with their creative practices. And for instance, our graduate school is hosting a symposium in a couple weeks that's all about DIY and the handmade. So I think, and let's hope, maybe we have another moment growing again in response to capitalism and how it's maybe changed communities.
Mm-hmm. And you say that when people make things by hand, they kind of naturally form a community?
Yeah, I think you could argue that. I think it takes a community to imbue these skills and teach you what to learn. I come from printmaking, and so there's a very tight printmaking community in its own silo. And I think the ability to make things with your hand, share it with the world, and people know that you made this and not a machine is something that will always remain integral to community building and who we are as people.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Hannah Bocken Morris. She is the co-curator of Commonly Uncommon, Selections from the Museum of Contemporary Craft Collection. That's on through December the 10th at the Pacific Northwest College of Art in Old Town. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus, Hannah.
Thank you, Joseph. It's been a pleasure.
Andy Warhol looks a scream. Hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
Esto es KBOO Portland por el 90.7 FM.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM.